Okay, let's go ahead and get started today. I would like to welcome Kozamun Bajan, who goes by Adi, or Adi, which
yes,
is
Adi.
He is currently a postdoctoral fellow here, and a senior fellow here in biomedical and health informatics, working with Miliha. He came from a fellowship in the Institute for Creative Technologies at University of Southern California. He has a master's and bachelor's degree in computer science from Romania, and he holds a PhD in computer science from the University of Texas at Dallas, where he investigated natural language processing and machine learning methodologies to capture semantics in the event structures that are encoded in text. And I think he's going to talk some about that kind of research today, so thank you.
Thank you. And thank you all for coming here. So before I'm going to start, and I just want to mention that this work is joint work with Lucy from Microsoft Research, Faye, Mark, and your mom, Miliha. And what I'm going to talk today is about processing natural language text that is encoded in clinical notes. And I will start first with how does a clinical note look like. Probably you all know how this looks like because you work with this kind of data, but I just want to mention that this is natural language text, but it has a little bit of more information, like structured data, like all these sections. So you have a clinical notes with sections like medication, physical examinations. And you also have encoded some medical concepts. These are some of them. But I just want to mention that we are able to extract this medical concept by using various tools. For example, you can use MetaMap from NLM to extract this from text. So, and also, I just want to mention that this is a little bit different from the what a natural language resource looks like, because it's a little bit more a bridge form. So. It's not so clean as corpus in natural language, but anyways, we can rely on tools for natural language processing to extract a lot of information from this kind of data. So what I'm going to talk today is, the talk is split in two parts. In the first part, I'm going to talk about a task called assertion classification, where basically you have a medical concept and you have to decide whether that medical concept is present for the patient or is absent, and so on. So I'll go into details in a couple of slides. And then, once I solve this task, I use the assertion classification for another task to solve basically a clinical application in the phenotype identification area. Basically, I'm going to focus on pneumonia identification. So basically, the entire task is on a single feature here. Basically, I'll look at the pneumonia concepts and try to see if there are those. What is the assertion value for those concepts? Okay, let's start with the assertion classification. So basically, the task is, for a given medical concept, you have to decide on one of these six assertion categories: present, absent, conditional, hypothetical, possible, and not associated with the patient. And I'll give examples in the next slides. So basically, the task is to, when you see a sentence in natural language and you see a concept, you have to identify one of these. You have to associate one of these six categories for that concept. And these are some examples for each of the six categories. Some of them are pretty intuitive, but I'll just explain the conditional and hypothetical. So conditionally, basically, it's for this medical concept or this medical problem is experienced by the patient only under certain conditions, right? So this is the condition where, so when a patient does some physical exercise or something like that. And the hypothetical is basically this concept is not experienced by the patient, but it's most likely to be experienced in the future. And so these are kind of relevant. So basically, again, the task is, having seen in the text these concepts, we have to automatically identify one of these assertion categories. Okay, let me talk about more the session classification. So it seems that recently this task captured a lot of attention, and it was proposed as a shared task by the I2B2 competition, and where the 21 teams competed to solve this task. The data set is mostly it's from 826 clinical reports, where it was already split in the training and test data, and where there are around 12,000 instances, training instances, around 18,550 test instances. So the splitting was already done. We don't have to do anything else in this part. We just have to use the training set, extract some features, and then do kind of machine learning framework and evaluate on the test set. And also the distribution of instances was highly unbalanced. There are a lot of examples with the present assertion category, 69%. But there are less than 1%, for example, the conditional assertion categories and non-patient. And it's kind of intuitive, basically. So you can find a lot more concepts that are present, and then accent, and then you have rare cases where this condition not present or absent. And I should also mention that the reports mostly were discharge summaries and also progress notes. Okay, so this is what the task is about, and I just also want to mention that the state of the art of the competition was achieved by a team from Research Canada laboratory, where they get 93.62 microaverage F measure. So this also, again, the evaluation was also set by the organizers. So the primary metrics was considered this microaverage F measure. And basically, they use a lot of feature engineering techniques, and they compute the machine learning framework was in two-tier classification. They first learn the words that are inside the concepts. They build the predictions, and then they kind of do an assembly learning for all these words to do a final prediction.
How good is that?
Sorry?
How good is that?
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Like a percentage that it corresponds to roughly?
Sorry?
Is there like a percentage that it corresponds to roughly? 70% right? Did it get 90% right?
So you can associate also this measure with accuracy.
Okay.
Because I mean, from the total number of instances, 93.62% were correctly classified.
Okay, so that is the
yes.
percentage.
Yes.
But did they split it out into kinds of things? Like you noted that the data set was pretty skewed. So if they just excluded and never said
exactly.
the hypothetical,
right.
or never said yeah. the not patient, they were going to get
right,
high
right.
percentage, so, but were there people actually separating out how well they could do on the hypothetical and not patient?
Right, exactly. So this is kind of average over each assertion category of F measures, and then put it in one big contingency table, and then extract the F measure from that. But basically, when you do the microaverage F measure in this way, they have the same exact score with the accuracy overall. Because you have six classes in there, yes. So there are the teams that after they participate in the competition, they further go ahead and improve their system. And one of these teams is from UT Dallas, and they basically use a lot of optimization features, optimization techniques for optimizing the extraction of the features or the feature selection. Task, and some other team from Utah improved further the microaggregate measure by focusing on the assertion categories that are not so, by focusing on the minority classes, like conditional, hypothetical, possible, and so on. So they basically extract features focused on those categories. So these are, and as you can see, the improvement is not so big, like, you know, but there are not so huge gaps in improvement. But basically, these are statistically significant because the number of training instances, number of test instances are very big. So you can run statistical significance tests and prove that these differences in performance are significant. Okay, so this is the overview of the assertion classification, and let's see our approach for this task. So basically, we have this corpus annotated with training and test instances, and the natural thing to do is to apply a supervised learning framework. And what we did, we used an SVM-based classification framework. The tool is called LibLinear with default parameter settings. So basically, we use LibLinear, and what we did, we extract a bunch of properties for each concept, like some properties of what we call features, like no or without. These features are relevant for the absent category, right? For the possible, you may have features like might or is possible, and so on. So we extract these kind of properties and try to characterize each concept, and then try to classify each concept in all of the six assertion categories. But before extracting the features, we did a kind of pre-processing, and we use a state-of-the-art toolkit from Microsoft Research, which is called SPLAT. And this gives us a lot of pre-processing of the data on the green card reports, like doing first lemmatization or extract the syntactic parse trees or dependency parse trees. And what we do also, we do apply optimization techniques on feature types, basically, because not all the features that we proposed are, we don't have a guarantee that they are the right features to use. So we select from a big set of only the most relevant features, so that that improve basically our F measure. And also, as all the other teams, we extract a lot of features. So we did a lot of feature engineering to characterize better each assertion category. So I will go and explain some of the features that are the most relevant for this task. The first set is basically try to explore the contextual information, the lexical information that surrounds the concepts. So basically all these words, lemmas, all these unigrams that are around the concepts, we extract these features. And then we extract some other special features like question mark. Question mark, usually physician attached to a concept when they are not so sure. So that kind of feature is like an indicator for a possible assertion category. What else? We test a lot of negative prefixes that for the words that are assigned to concepts. And we also use some tools that were previously used, developed for negation detection. These are rule-based tools, and we use it basically. We use their output like a feature for our system. So these tools were implemented before, several years ago, by Wendy Chapman for some restricted task called negation detection. They basically try to see if the concept is present or absent. But they have very good rules inside, and these are very good for increasing your precision, but not recall, because the rules are not able to cover all the possible assertion rules. Okay, so the other type of features are the section features. These are highly indicative for some classes of assertion categories, like the allergy sections are indicative. All the concepts in the allergy sections are indicative of the conditional. So we have an allergy under, I don't know, certain circumstance. For example, another example is the family history section header. In the family history, you have concepts that are not associated with the patient, for example, and so on. So we extract these section headers from the reports, and basically we use it as a feature. And the way we extract it is simple heuristics by looking at the lines at the end with the column, where the specific lines that have specific expression like Wilson's family history medication, even if they don't end with a colon, right? And this way we can identify the section headers in these reports and basically extract the features from those. So these are the section features, and then the other category of features is basically we try to look at the contextual information around the medical concept like this one and try to see which of these engrams are more relevant for a specific assertion category. For example, if we look at the present, these are the most relevant features for the present. Basically what this table says is that these engrams show in the left of the concept and of course so many times for the present category and this many times from someone else, right? So this one is, and basically based on these counts we can compute an overall score and try to see how relevant each of these features is are for each of the assertion categories. So for the present, the score for this trigram it's one because it doesn't occur in any other assertion category, but only for the present. So this is highly indicative for this present category. The same one for conditional and so on. Right. So basically, we did that for each of the categories, and once we have all the scores computed, we can rank all these. Yes.
So, what's the training data look like? So, bound to have. How do you know that's present? Is there like?
We look only at the training data basically and extract this information, because
in the training data, is it a sentence is tagged as a present, or is it the whole document?
Basically, what we did, we look at the concepts that are already annotated for us. So the concepts are given, and we look at the left three words, and count for each left three words how many times those words occur for each of these categories in the training set. So this one counts occur 35 times for the present category. So we extract counts for each of these engrams, right? Some other examples are this one. We also look at the sparse features like these ones, like this. So this looks also at the left. So this can be replaced with no medical concept or medical concept, right, and so on. Did not medical concept, and so on, right? So all this occurs on the left. For the conditional is usually in the right. This, for example, medical concept on exertion or with exertion or someone, right? These are the one that matched, right? And so once we did this, we put all of these features in some bags, and then when we have a training instances to extract the features, basically we say which of the feature belongs to each of the to which bag. Basically, this is what we do. And so these are kind of, this feature give us six binary features and try to see if it's true or false, is it belongs in one bag or not, right? But the idea is to explore which are the most relevant features for each of the six assertion categories. And a novel set of features that we wanted to explore. So basically, all of these explore a lot of contextual information that surrounds the concept. But we want to understand the assertion categories better. And one idea is to look at the examples. And what we can see is all of these examples are triggered by some specific words. What we call these words we call the assertion cues. So basically, for the present, this is highly indicative for this example. This is highly indicative for the absent. So there are, in most of the examples, there are some keywords that are indicative for each of these assertion categories. So what we want to do is basically extract these keywords, identify the keywords, and some other thing that we want to do is, we want to do if the focus of this keyword is on the concept. I will explain this on the next slide, but basically the idea is that some of the keywords can have a different focus, and what we want to do is to explore the link between those keywords and the concept. So what we did, basically, to extract the assertion cues, we looked in some other corpora, and that are annotated for similar tasks. Basically, we used the bias corpus to extract the negation cues, and some examples are these ones. For the speculative cues, like this one, such as possibly, we extract all of these that are annotated in bias code. We extract the temporal signals from this port, which is annotated with temporal expressions, events, and temporal relations. And basically, we extract all these temporal signals. And these are basically indicative for the conditional words, like when doing some exercise or after doing some exercise, and so on. And then we extract some kinship terms from a dictionary. Basically, these are indicative for the not patient or not associated with the patient keywords. And once we have these keywords that we call assertion keywords, we want to explore the connection between the keywords and the concept in each sentence. And the way we do it is basically we extract the features that connect these two concepts, the keyword and the concept. And so this is one thing that we want to do is to explore this connection. And once we have a keyword, we want to identify which of the assertion categories is relevant to. Right? But I'll explain what I mean by assertion. By assertion focus or negation focus first. So basically, when you have some more complicated example like this one, usually express the absent, indicates the absent category, and this one the conditional category. You just want to you have to decide which of these assertion categories is indicative for this concept. And in general, you may have examples like this one. This is taken from a grammar book, but basically, based on how do you set the focus of your keywords, it can mean something different. So the meaning of this keyword, the negation word, it can have different meanings based on how you set your focus. So basically, if your focus is on it didn't take John, the meaning is that I didn't take John, I could take Mary, right? If your focus is didn't take John to swim, the meaning is I didn't take John to swim, but I didn't take John to do something else, and so on. Didn't take to the pool, I took it somewhere else. Or I didn't take him today, I did yesterday, or something like that. And the same for this one, I didn't take John, but maybe Mary took him, right? So basically, the idea is we have to explore where the focus is on which part of the sentence is, right? And what we want to do is we want to decide if the focus is on the medical concept that we want to identify. And the features for this one is basically, these are kind of syntactic features. We look at the dependency trees, and basically, what we want to explore, the path in the tree between the concept and your assertion cue. And these are the features that we use. So basically, we look at the context window for the closest negative cue. We look at the path on the dependency tree between the concept and the root, and try to see if on this path to the root, we can find an assertion cue, and we extract that. If on this path we find a word with the first word that we found, we extract it. And then we also extract the sequence of part of speech label between the concept and the assertion cue. So once we have that, we can now run the supervised framework and train a model, and then trying to predict trying to evaluate the model on the test set. And basically, these are the results that we get. So the results are in evaluated in terms of precision recall for each assertion category, and but the overall results was evaluated in terms of microaverage of measure and macroaverage of measure, and the primary measure was the microaverage of measure. And we try to do this systematically by starting with the basic features, and we obtain these results. And when adding all these features, including the assertion features, we get an improvement up to 95.89. So this is basically the evaluation on the training set. And when we compare with the state of the art system, once we evaluate it, we optimize the best feature set, with that feature set, we evaluate it on the test set, and then we compare it with this state of the art system, and we get a slightly better evaluation, better microaverage measure. But so basically, we have some better improvements for the present, which is the most the largest category in this set, but for example, they have better measures for the absent.
Can you go on this again? So, how are you testing on the training sets? Let's use the training sets. So, was the training set divided into as well, or how?
No. Basically, once you have all the parameters set, you just use those parameters and just around
on your the test sets, right?
Yes.
So where are the numbers for the training set coming from?
These numbers are basically, I did a five-fold cross-validation.
Okay.
So I split the training set into five folds, yeah. And then I did these evaluations. Right, so basically, I think the results are pretty good, but what we are most interested in how we use these for a practical application like phenotype extraction. And so basically, we did a little bit of error analysis first to try to see where we did mistakes in this task. And most of the errors come for the conditional class. It seems that the conditional class is hard to capture for this task. And we'll see much more examples in the next slide. For the conditional, but also some of the minor examples, mistakes are inconsistencies in the annotations. For example, this example, this sentence was annotated for the conditional category, and this one's for the present category, which is that's basically similar. But and some other researchers found some other inconsistencies for this kind of category. But you have to take into account that the annotations are not perfect, but. But anyway, you have to build a tool that do as best for the data that you have. And these are examples that the classifier didn't correctly classify as conditional. All of them are for the conditional, so you have all these conditions for your concept. So the idea is that the classifier it's kind of biased towards the classes that are majority, and the conditional it's the number of instances in the conditionals are not too many, so that's why the classifiers tend to predict the majority class for all these examples. What we try to do is basically to capture all these instances in the features. We basically try to do it to map it in the syntactic parse trees with structures like that. When you have a prepositional phrase with a preposition and a noun phrase, or you have a subordinate clause that look like that. So all these two structures capture all these examples. And what we try to do is basically identify these in all of these instances, and then look at the head word of the NP or the clause here, and try to see if the head word of this constituent it's a hyponym of the human action or activity. So the idea is we try to capture this conditions, and these conditions are basically expressed in in terms of prepositions or these adverbial phrases when doing something, when doing an activity, basically. So we try to capture these, and then basically once we, so we have a binary features, basically. If it's a hyponym of these insets, we predict one or zero otherwise. And then we feed these features to the classifier. But basically, due to this problem that the data is so skew, the classifier wasn't able to predict these kind of instances. So, yes?
Did anybody try doing a series of binary classifiers instead of doing a, so that instead of determining which of the six categories it's in, doing individual categorization?
Yes. Actually, the ASVM do it like that. It does binary classification and then try to combine the overall predictions by doing one versus all, looking at the one category compared to all these categories. So this is one approach. It's one versus all approach, and then is another approach is all versus all, looking all the pairs of try to see what is better. So SVM actually it's a binary predictor, but it's combining these ways for multi-class classification.
So that is what you were doing.
Yes, this is actually what is doing here. Right. So this is for the assertion classification task, and what we're interested in now is to use the assertion classification for what we're interested in most in pneumonia identification. So in pneumonia identification, basically, you have a cohort of patients, and you have to identify each patient based on their reports whether the patient is positive or negative for pneumonia. And what we're interested in here is try to see what is the role of the assertion classification for this task, right? And the way we do it is basically we run the assertion classification of the pneumonia concepts and try to see how well these kind of assertion features perform on this new task, pneumonia identification. But first, I just want to motivate this task. And basically, the idea is this task is not so easy to perform. If you have a checkbox in your reports that say this is patient is positive for pneumonia or negative, your job here is done. But basically, it's not like that. Usually. In this kind of reports, you have a lot of like hedge words, like physician doesn't actually say this patient has pneumonia or not. It basically is in, many times it's in the hedging zone, like it may have pneumonia or it's possible to have, because these are terms like in terms of liability or waiting for more tests to arrive. And so in some of the reports, there are patients that don't even have pneumonia concept mentioned in their report. And you have to rely on some other information, like symptoms or something else, or medication, and some other features in order to predict whether the patient has pneumonia or not. And this kind of task is useful if you imagine that you have a kind of surveillance tool running in a hospital and try to see at that moment which patient is positive for pneumonia or not. This is relevant for any other kind of phenotype, especially for this one that needs to put people in quarantine or something. So this is kind of a tool that can run in a MRI or in a hospital and try to give you some red alerts when something out of a threshold happens. But this is also used in clinical research, trying to work with the cohorts of patients and so on. So the idea is that the task is not so easy to solve, and we have to rely on all the information that are encoded in the clinical reports, including the chest X-ray reports. But basically, what we did here is we rely on a mixture of report types, because the previous work was mainly use the check CSRA reports, and what we want to do is we want to explore all the other information that is encoded in in the other report types, and mostly we're interested in the interpretation of this data for the patient. Right. So, and there are some other words that report successful results by when using a mixture of report types. So, this is the data that we use for our task. So we have 426 patients in ICU. A medical expert identified 66 cases for positive pneumonia and the rest of them for negative pneumonia. This is the number of reports for the 426 patients, and this is the distribution of the reports time with their number for each patient. And as you can see, most of the reports are progress notes, ICU daily progress notes, because basically physicians every day they have to put the report how to model or to assess the progress of the disease or the patient for every day. But you can also see that there are a lot of reports that are missing for the patients. They are not patients that, for example, have all the patients have admit notes or have discharge summaries and so on. So this data set is not complete. It's not complete, but some of the patients, for example, they went to ICU from other departments of the hospital. So they don't have admit note when going to ICU and so on. But anyway, this is the real data that we have to deal with, and we have to see what results we get from this kind of data. And we split this data. We do these two types of experiments. One where we consider the entire cohort of patients and some more clean data, but with not so many patients. So we put the restriction that the patient had both admit note and discharge summary. And we do reports for each of these data set. And okay, so the way we did it is based on two ideas. One idea is basically extract a bunch of features and put them in a classifier, trying to classify it and try to see what results you get. This is the classical approach of supervised learning, where you have the data, you install the features, and you build the predictions. And for the feature types, we don't use too many feature types. We use only the lexical information, and we use the concept words that we extract with MetaMap. And then basically, each data instance in our case is a patient. A patient is represented by the reports. And basically, we extract features from the reports, these features, and try to see what performance we get. So basically, this is the idea for extracting features and using the classification. And this is basically the baseline that we use. However, a better idea is basically extract only the most relevant features from the reports. And the way we did it is basically for each feature, you try to measure what is the correlation for the feature and for the pneumonia category, and then once we have the once we have these association scores, you rank the features and get used in the classification task only the features that are highly correlated or highly ranked. So this is also, this kind of method is also called statistical feature selection. And I'll explain in the next slides in details how this method works. So for the statistical feature selection, it was usually used in the task of text categorization, where you have huge documents and you try to classify each document in one of the categories. And this proved to be a successful task for this kind of applications, because it improved the accuracy, but also it reduces the feature space and improved the efficiency of the classified, because you have your feature space is not so large, so you have a smaller feature set, but it's more relevant for your task, and also provide a better understanding of the data. So the way we extract, we compute these association scores is basically we look at each feature and build the contingency table for the features. Once we have this contingency table, we can compute multiple association measures. For example, t-statistics scores. We also try some other correlation scores here. And then once we extract, we rank all these features, and we put a threshold on the features. So we rank it, put a threshold, and based on that threshold, we extract the most relevant features. And we use those relevant features to build the feature vector for each patient. And basically, in our case, now the feature space is equal with the threshold value, and the size of the feature vector is at most this value. I'll explain this in details, but this is a story in words of the statistical feature selection. But in picture, it looks like that. You have a bunch of features for extracted from the reports. And the idea is to order these features. So this one is the most relevant for this kind of test. I use the t-statistical test. This one is the second most relevant. But the idea is you look at these features and you build a contingency table. So you basically count how many times these features occurs for patient positive or with pneumonia, how many times all the other features occurs for positive patients or pneumonia and so on. And you build this kind of contingency table for each of the features. Once you have these contingency tables, these counts, you can now compute all these measures. For example, when you use the t-statistical test, I'm not going into details, but these t-statistical tests look at the distribution of events. That distribution of events is basically our feature extraction process. And from this distribution, it looks at the expected mean and the sample mean of this distribution. So we try to see how correlated these two events are. So the event that's very interesting is the feature F occurring in the feature extraction. And another feature is the event of a patient being positive for pneumonia. So basically, we are looking for these two features occurring together. The feature F occurring for patient being positive for pneumonia. So we look at these as this joint probability. And the null hypothesis here for this statistical test is try to see if there is a correlation for this event to occur during the feature extraction phase. And we use this formula to compute these numbers. And once we have a ranked feature set, we can establish a threshold and say, this is my threshold, these are the most significant features for my task. And then now I want to build the feature. So basically, this is my feature space right now. I will only look at these features. And now when I build the feature vector for my patient, it's basically I extract all the features from my reports, but I only look at the patient at the features that are in my feature space. So basically, it's the intersection between this feature space and the feature representation. So the feature vector for this patient, for this example, is only these features.
Yes. So how do you set up the number for the threshold?
Again? You can learn this threshold, but we in our experiments we didn't learn it. We just evaluated for different values of threshold. So the idea is the same. We try to see if we use the smaller number of features, it's relevant for our task or not. So basically, we wanted to see if a much smaller number of features or relevant features, if the relevant features are usable for pneumonia identification or not. So this is the idea. So overall, the idea is you want to improve the pneumonia identification. You can consider the entire features, but you want to see what happens if you have a smaller set of relevant features.
So you're trying different numbers of threshold and see
yes.
which one has the best
yes. yes, yes.
We undertake we have a faster
experience. Yeah. Basically, I was showing in the end the results with various threshold values and see how the performance evolves compared with the baseline when you consider all the features. So basically, so here are some examples of the most informative features for all these feature types. So for unigrams, bigrams, UMLS concepts. So we do the same kind of statistical feature selection for each feature type, and we rank the features. So these are the top 10 features for unigrams, bigrams, and UMLS concepts. And this was validated by physicians, and most of the features are indicative for pneumonia. Some of them express symptoms, some of them medication for pneumonia, some of them are indicative for pneumonia, like these ones or these ones, and so on. But some other side effects of this kind of statistical feature selection is that this kind of test looks also at the associations between the features and the two categories, positive and negative pneumonia. So this, from the semantic point of view, this is not a relative features, but it's basically what it captures. It captures the relevance of these kind of bigrams that occurs in the clinical test. And this is kind of normal if you think that a physician, if he's kind of writing every day, the same type of reports, it kind of develops an automatism in you know, writing this kind of order between these tests. But nevertheless, the idea is that the most relevant features are in the top of this list, and the noisy features are, the redundant features are at the bottom. Okay, so now the idea is we want to use the assertion classification for this kind of task. So we use the here we're using statistical feature selection, the lexical features and the concept features, but we also want to use the assertion feature and try to see. So basically we run the assertion classification for each of the concept and want to extract the assertion feature for each patient. And the way we did is basically, so this is a binary feature for each patient. It gets a one if these features associated with positive pneumonia and minus zero otherwise. So the way we do it is basically we extract assertion values for each pneumonia expression in the reports, and then count how many times each of the assertion categories were identified for each concept. So a pneumonia expression can occur multiple times for the same patient, right? And we count how many times these occur for each of the assertion category. And basically, we look at the most frequent or the highest count that is associated with the category. And then we try to map the category to the positive or negative pneumonia. So I'll explain in the next slides what these mappings involves. But the idea is that you have six assertion categories and you have to map it to the positive or negative pneumonia. And then basically once you do the mapping, you assign a different, you assign plus or minus for the patient that have pneumonia, or you assign a default value for those patients that don't have pneumonia concept in their reports. And as you can see, that there are many patients that don't have pneumonia concepts in their reports. And now, the problem is how you do the mapping. From this case, there are 62 ways of mapping the assertion categories to positive or negative pneumonia, but we identify only two mappings that are the most indicative or most relevant in this case. Because the present is obviously mapping to positive, and not patient, and absent is obviously mapping to negative. The problem is, how do you map these categories? This is what we call the hedge categories. So the idea is you have to map it either to a positive or to the negative. So you have two types of mapping. And the idea here is you have to see which kind of mappings is most relevant for this task. The idea is try to see if we map to the positive, the hedge categories, or if we map to the negative, what is the performance. So we do not by hedge plus, when the mapping of the hedge categories is to put to the positive and hedge minus when the mapping is to the negative. And we get this kind of results and for these two mappings. And as you can see, when you map the categories to the negative, you have kind of better results. But that if you do the mapping to the positive. So these results are starting from the assertion classification task. But of course, so you have to do, you have to decide which kind of mapping you run in the mnemonic identification task, right? But of course, we have to see how we use it in the mnemonic identification. And just to summarize, what I explained until now for the mnemonic identification is this is the classical architecture for a supervisory framework when you basically extract the features and do the predictions. This is the extensions where you use the assertion classification, and here are the statistical feature selection when you do the ranking features. And now, once we have that, I just want to see the results that that we obtain based on these two systems. So basically, the first system was implemented by Meliha, and she used the entire feature space. She didn't do any kind of feature selection, and she performed five-fold cross validation. She used many feature combinations, but basically the best performing ones were when using only the unigrams. And she also do multiple combination of reports, but when you use the entire all the type of reports, you get the best results. So we kind of take this setup and use it for the extension of the system. And first we use a rule-based system by looking only at a set feature. And we compare with the baseline. And the results are a little bit better than the baseline. But they are not significant because the number of patients is not so high, so the results are not statistically significant. However, when we do the extension of the system by using statistical feature selection and with assertion category, we get significant results. And this is the results when you use different threshold values. So basically, we didn't know the threshold. We just want to see how the performance evolves when we're using like the first 10 features, most significant features, the 20, and so on. And as you can see, here are the 40,000 features. It's basically the entire set of features. And if you look at the last threshold values, this is basically, the results are really similar with the baseline because the baseline also uses the entire feature set. So these kind of the results converge towards the baseline. But the idea is when you look at all these threshold configuration, the results are much higher. For example, the best results are here in 87 compared with the 50s of with the baseline. So the idea is the statistical feature selection improves in this task. And furthermore, when you use the assertion feature like this one, so you put on top on order concepts the assert features. So this is kind of the best values. And also, when you put on top of words the assert feature, it's also, so these are the two best configuration that when you use. And we prove basically when you use the assertion feature, so we split the experiments when you use one feature types and you add to the feature types the assertion feature. We get significantly better results when all this configuration happens. For example, the best results that we get when with an entire combination of the feature types, it's around 87.06, which is significantly better than the baseline. And in conclusion, I just want to mention that right now we have state-of-the-art results for assertion classification. So we have a very performant tool for doing this kind of assertion classification. We show when you do statistical feature selection and extracting only the most relevant features for the task of mnemonic identification, achieves significantly better results that when using the entire space of the entire feature space. Then we also show the assertion feature that matters for the task of pneumonia identification. And the last conclusion is, when you want to map the hedging categories to either positive or negative, for this task and for this data set, it seems that the physician usually, when you say that it's possible to have pneumonia, they most likely mean that you don't have pneumonia.
I've got a question about that. So in terms of clinical care, I understand that statistically mapping to negative gives you better results.
Yeah.
But in terms of clinical care, mapping to positive is actually less costly because if you miss one case of pneumonia, bad things happen, right? But if you actually think someone gets pneumonia and someone goes and checks them, and they don't, that's okay, right? In this case, the false positive is cheaper than false negative, right?
Well, we didn't think in that way. I mean, we wanted, I mean, to detect the pneumonia or to detect the negative pneumonia, we give the equal weight for each patient. And so we didn't consider, but we wanted to see when the people express this hedging words, what is the tendency for this identification.
You would assume that for most health conditions, right?
Yes.
People that are sure, just statistically will end up more of the time they don't have anything.
But I don't think that was the task here. I think the task here is more of a quality improvement one, right? Of detecting acquired pneumonia in hospitals and that kind of stuff. So
this data set has been created for cohort selection. So it's false positive is more cost than you want to get to those responses. If you want to map this to EMR, like that story changes.
Right, but that's the part because he was thinking it just sort of runs in the EMR and
no, that's the purpose of this project, but we are rebuilding our new data set.
Oh, I see.
The aim is that, but
yeah.
We are experimenting on a different data set which was created for COVID.
And I just want to mention that when you care, you don't care about the false positive. We have these role classifiers where, for example, it gives you a higher percent of recall. So, but basically, this is classify many patients as being positive, and many of the negative patients as being positive as well. So it's a kind of bias towards the positive class. And this way, you know, if you don't care about the false positive, you can run the assertion, but classifies, but you have very low precision in this case.
We are over time, so we should give a big hand. And we can ask questions afterwards.
So, probably an idiotic question, since I don't know anything about machine learning, but given how, going back to the notion that there is, that really the conditionals that are really powerful because the data sets are really biased. Would it be to just cut down the number of false negative cases? So if you have out of 5,000 examples, you have only 300 positive cases, so it's just randomly picking 300 negative cases and just running on that.
Yeah.
One of them is